Welcome to Podcast School, brought to you by GH Marketing. Our guest today is Adam Shepherd, head of podcasts for Markham and editor of the British Podcast Awards. Today, expect to learn the role of podcasting in advertising and its effectiveness compared to traditional media, explore the strategies for monetizing podcasts through subscription models and the landscape of creative partnerships, and discover how the British Podcast Awards celebrates excellence in the UK podcasting scene. Have you heard about the British Podcast Awards? Well, you can enter to maybe win a prize. All you have to do is go to britishpodcastawards.com and submit your podcast to be considered. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you're there, please leave us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for promoting our podcast and getting it in front of more people. And that's going to help us continue to bring different gurus in the podcast industry to explain to you all the different ways you can use your podcast to help grow your business. And with that, here's Adam Shepherd.
Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show. We are going to talk today about plenty of very fascinating topics. To begin with, I'd like to discuss the evolution of the podcast industry lately, which I think you have quite some insights of. So tell me, what's going on in the podcast world lately? What has been the evolution over the past few years of podcasts as a media, advertisers, industry? Give me the whole shebang.
Starting off nice and simple, that's what I like to say. First of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. So in terms of major trends within the podcast industry over the last couple of years, that is, of course, a fairly big question. It's a notoriously fast-moving and dynamic sector, and one that's only getting faster and more dynamic as it develops. But there have been a couple of notable trends over the past couple of years in particular. One of them has been an increasing amount of attention from large established media organizations and publishers who have really started taking podcasting seriously as a medium in recent years. I mean, in the UK, for example, just recently, we've had the major sort of national broadcasters announcing the pundits and personalities that are going to be making up their election coverage for the upcoming UK general election. And most of the major broadcasters have podcasters as part of their lineups. So on Channel 4, for example, you have Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart from The Rest Is Politics, as well as Emily Maitlis from the news agents, among other sort of more traditional kind of news anchors. And what that really shows, for me anyway, is that broadcasters and media organizations have really started waking up to the potential that podcasting can offer for building passionate audiences in specific areas and specific subjects of interest that have really deep engagement with that subject. And those kinds of audiences can really provide a baseline foundation for you to build valuable relationships on top of, which, you know, as many traditional media organizations have seen over the past year, is becoming increasingly more valuable in the modern media landscape. Subscriptions also are another key trend, not just for established organizations, but increasingly for smaller independent podcasters. They are providing a really crucial way for podcasters that don't quite have the scale of audience necessary to make advertising a sort of approachable or a viable solution. Subscription platforms like Patreon and like Substack and like various other platforms out there, Apple podcast subscriptions included, are kind of offering a way for podcasters to monetize smaller audiences more directly, which gives them that stable revenue baseline that they can then reinvest in their show and keep the lights on as they follow that kind of slower, more organic growth trajectory.
So I'd like to double down a bit on that subscription model. Advertising is something we want to dig much, much deeper into this episode. But very quickly on the subscription, how does it typically work? Because I can imagine, for instance, if I have 100 listeners, right? Well, do you know approximately what proportion of those will be becoming subscribers? for which about, like, how sustainable is it for a small to medium podcaster to rely on subscription? Is it their only business model? That's, again, lots of questions. So I'm going to stop now and let you answer.
In terms of conversion rates, that is a notoriously tricky figure to predict. Marketing and advertising professionals the world over have been, you know, seeking the answer for what the, you know, what the ideal kind of percentage is for conversion for decades, if not longer. The short answer is it depends. Generally speaking, though, podcasting tends to have a fairly high conversion rate when it comes to things like subscribers. It's still likely to be in the single digits, let's say. So probably around 5 to maybe 10% of your listeners will convert to paying subscribers, you know, in some capacity, if you are very, very lucky. The real question is, how many of them do you need to convert to subscribers in order for that to be a sustainable revenue source? If you look at most podcast subscription offerings, generally speaking, they will range from $3 to $5 at the entry level, where you don't get a huge amount of additional benefits. It's mainly just as a way to support a certain show, up to maybe around $10 for the sort of middle ground tier. That's where you'll typically get things like a little bit of bonus content every so often, you know, a couple of extra perks, that kind of thing. And then you'll have the top tier, which, again, generally speaking, is likely to be around $15 to $20. And that comes with kind of more bells and whistles and, you know, a few more extras, but predominantly is used as kind of a way to just, you know, if you're a super fan of a given podcast, just supporting them as much as possible. Generally speaking, most subscribers will fall into that second sort of middle tier, where, you know, it's not a huge amount of outlay for the subscriber, but you're still getting a certain amount of bonus content back. And if you think of that as a sort of, yeah, about $10 subscription, you don't really have to have a huge amount of those before it starts becoming actually a pretty sustainable income, particularly for a smaller independent podcast. You know, if you've got 5 subscribers for $10 a month, let's say, that is $50 that you've got coming in. That is enough to cover the costs for most podcast hosting platforms. It's enough to cover subscription fees for, you know, editing tools and that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's a solid foundation to start growing other revenue channels like live events or like merchandise or, you know, like advertising on a sort of small initial basis. But it means that you can explore those opportunities without having to worry about how much of your own money you're putting into keeping the show going.
I love that. To come back on one of the things you started with, Adam, big publishers, big media, going into the podcast world as a medium. Why that? Is it all about that connection with the audience that you mentioned? Do they see a huge opportunity that they cannot get anymore in other traditional media? Like, what's the reason behind it?
I think there are a number of reasons behind it. A huge part of it is that podcasting is a growing medium and one that is, to a large extent, comparatively untapped in comparison to things like, you know, TV and online publishing and online video in particular. Podcasting has a relatively low barrier to entry as well. It doesn't require a huge investment in equipment, in talent, and in editing resource to get a new project off the ground. Not that podcasting doesn't require investment, of course it does, but the barrier to entry compared to even, you know, things like social video and YouTube is exponentially lower and easier to get going without having a huge amount of startup capital behind it. The other element of it is that it is a really engaging medium, and it's a medium that uniquely suits long-form engagement and long-form storytelling in a way that I would argue few other mediums do. And it means that you can tell a story with depth and with nuance over a long period and a long running time and have audiences actively engage with it and really follow that story and, you know, thus follow you as a publisher and as a media house. And that's really uniquely valuable in the current climate, where in many other mediums, attention spans and content lengths are getting shorter and less nuanced.
Adam, there is a reason why you're so knowledgeable. It's because you've been the editor of PodPod for quite some time. You're now the head of podcast for Markham's and editor of the British Podcast Awards. Can you tell us a bit more, actually, about this? So PodPod, migration to campaign, what is happening over there?
So PodPod was a brand that Haymarket Business Media set up around the craft and business of podcasting. And we worked very closely with the British Podcast Awards to help drive the awards forward, to help bring more people to it and to help amplify the winners of the awards and really shout about the amazing talent and the amazing work being done in British podcasting. As part of that, PodPod has now been rolled into Campaign, which is one of our sister titles focusing on the advertising and marketing industry. And really this reflects the growing interest that the advertising and media landscape is taking in podcasting. There is a huge amount of interest from, you know, large brands and large agencies in the podcasting landscape. Just today, as we record, for example, I was at a launch event for the Internet Advertising Bureau UK's digital ad spend report, which they run on an annual basis. Basically measuring how much money is going into digital advertising in the UK and sort of the various channels that it's going into. And it showed that podcasting, the amount of money going into it, is up by 23%, up to, I believe, £83 billion for 2023, which, yeah, is a lot of money. And, you know, just for comparison, the overall advertising market, digital advertising market in the UK grew by only around 11%, I believe, considerably lower than podcasting. So it really reflects for me that podcasting is maturing as a medium and is being taken seriously by those large companies and those large organizations. And that is, while the independent sector and the freelance sector is crucial at keeping podcasting the vibrant and exciting and creative medium that we know and love, media and advertising investment in the sector is going to be crucial for its long-term growth and sustainability as a medium, in the same way that we've seen with TV and radio in years gone past.
100%. 83 billion British pounds over the period of a year, just in the podcast industry. Where does the money go?
That is a very good question. The money goes to a variety of different places. A large proportion of that money goes to big advertising networks. So there are a couple of different kinds of podcast advertising for anyone that's not aware. You get at the sort of base level what you might call spot ads, or sometimes referred to as dynamically inserted ads. And what those are the sort of pre-recorded, generally around 30-second adverts from a brand. You know, the same kind that you might hear on the radio or on a music streaming platform. And those get inserted into a podcast's sort of RSS feed. They might be baked into the podcast at at the point of upload, but often they're inserted dynamically based on a range of different sort of calculations and whatnot that happen on the back end. Those are generally provided, those advertising opportunities are generally provided by the likes of Spotify, Acast, Global's DAX platform in the UK, programmatic audio platforms who allow agencies and other advertisers to buy advertising impressions on the podcasts within their sort of advertising networks. That is where a lot of the money that goes into podcasting goes, because it is a very predictable way for advertisers to buy a large amount of impressions for their adverts. So it means they can predictably say, okay, we want X many million people to listen to our advert. Here is some money. Make that happen for us. An increasing amount of the money, however, is going towards more large-scale creative partnerships. So the more content-led partnerships that span a longer period with a smaller number of specific podcasters, maybe even one specific show, where a brand will work really closely with a podcast to craft a campaign that gets across the specific message that the advertiser's looking to reach audiences with, but in a way that is really closely tailored to that particular podcast and what their style is, what their sensibility is, what their audience has come to expect from them, in a way that aligns really nicely with the kind of overall campaign goals, and in some ways doesn't feel like advertising to the viewer. And that's the goal of a lot of advertisers, really.
Oh my God. Okay, lots to unpack here. I want to keep the suspense a little bit longer, the tension a bit longer, Adam, but we're going to get back to this advertising because there is so much to explore, literally. You briefly mentioned the British Podcast Awards. What is that? Can you walk me through what's the British Award? Can I apply for a British Podcast Awards? How does it work?
So the British Podcast Awards essentially is an award scheme for podcasting in Britain that has been running since 2017 and really is an opportunity for the podcast community to shout about the excellent work that is being done across the audio sector and across the podcast sector, and to really champion the shows and the content that are out there driving the medium forward. We want to put these amazing shows in front of as big of an audience as we can, because they really are exceptional. There are some fantastic, fantastic shows that are out there in the market. So in terms of who can enter, the awards are open to programmes that have either been produced in Great Britain and Northern Ireland or designed primarily for UK audiences. Entries should be for podcasts that are published from the 1st of January 2023 to the 30th of April this year. And so you need to have 6 episodes published at least within the qualifying period, and we want to make sure that we're highlighting kind of series rather than sort of one-off pieces of content.
Okay, so they make also the distinction between series and just ongoing podcasts, like this one. Typically, we won't stop after a series of 10 episodes. Right? It's just ongoing. Is there a distinction between those two type of podcasts?
No.
Okay. What else is there to know about the British Podcast Awards? Like, so we know the what and we know the who. Why? How do you do that? When does it take place? What do the winner get? How do we, how does this whole thing work?
So the awards themselves are judged by a panel of over 100 industry experts, kind of leading lights from all corners of the industry, from kind of prolific freelance and independent producers, senior figures from the BBC, from places like Spotify, from content producers and production houses across the industry. So a really star-studded panel of judges that listen to all of the entries that we get in. The ceremony takes place on the 26th of September in central London at a venue just off Tottenham Court Road, the Outernet, for anyone that knows the area. It's a really, really fantastic venue. It's very new. It's very shiny. And the kind of vibe that we go for with the awards is we want it to feel special for those that are nominated and those that come on the night. We want it to feel like the Oscars of podcasting or the National Television Awards of podcasting or the Emmys of podcasting. We want it to feel like an event. We want it to feel like something that you get dressed up for that feels special. And, you know, we really try and make sure that we capture that energy and that passion that goes into all of the podcasts that end up on the shortlist for the awards, because really that's the fundamental characteristic that unites all successful podcasts, certainly that I've seen, is genuine passion and dedication for both the craft of podcasting and for the subjects that those podcasts are talking about. So that's the core of the feeling that we want to capture.
What do you personally like about it then?
About the ceremony or about podcasting?
About the British Podcast Awards and about the ceremony. But I would love to have your answer about podcasts in general as well. But let's start with the awards.
So what I love about the awards and about the ceremony is I love watching the reactions of people who are maybe smaller podcasters, independent podcasters, who get their chance to have their big sort of awards ceremony moment and to get the recognition for the work that they've been putting in a venue and an environment that feels worthy of that care and attention that they put into their shows. You know, in a lot of cases, the winners that we have on stage are podcasters that do it in their spare time, that do it maybe as a hobby, who do it around a day job. And, you know, in a lot of cases, they never imagined that they would be sharing a stage with, you know, people from the BBC, you know, people who continue to have successful TV careers, you know, and it really gives them an opportunity to be recognized for the work that they're doing at the level that they deserve, which absolutely is the equal of, you know, a lot of kind of more established media personalities and media operations. And seeing them get to have that moment and have that experience is something that I just find so rewarding, because yeah, it's lovely to get that level of recognition.
So I'm checking, and you guys have actually, I just saw the Podpod Hall of Frame winner, a very interesting one. I'm checking the website right now, and there are about 20 to 25 kind of genres categories. How many, and just for the ones who don't know, three winners, gold, silver, and bronze. How many applications do you receive per year / per category / per, type of podcast?
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I think last year, if memory serves, we had over 1,000 entries.
Okay.
So it's a huge amount.
And so do the panel of 100 independent judge listen to all of them?
Yes. Yes, they do. So the way we structure entries is, I mean, obviously we can't ask judges to listen to the entirety of every podcast that gets submitted. There aren't enough hours in the day. What we do is entries consist of a 15-minute clip, which consists of 3 to 5 separate clips from the podcast in question. And that's accompanied by a 250-word written statement, kind of illustrating why your podcast should win that particular category, and a 250-word track listing explaining what each clip is and why you've chosen it. There are slightly different entry requirements for some of the categories, notably things like the interview category, the fiction category, and I believe the documentary category, where the rules around how many clips and how long they can be is slightly different to accommodate the differences in those particular genres. But yeah, generally it's a 15-minute clip, and yes, the judges listen to the entirety of every clip, because they are incredibly diligent.
That's actually very impressive. So beyond fame, obviously.
I should also note that while we get a huge amount of entries, we also have a large number of filter judges who do an amazing job of going through the initial sort of batches of entries that we get and identifying things like those that don't fit the criteria or those that haven't filled in their entry properly, and kind of slimming down the sort of the entry pool until we get to a long list that then gets passed on to the main judges. So the filter judges are an invaluable part of the process. And if anyone wants to join this year's filter judging pool, there is a form on the British Podcast Awards website where you can nominate yourself or someone else to join the filter judging pool. So anyone that's interested, please do get in touch.
We will most certainly put the link in the description. So that all makes a lot of sense and is also very impressive. Like 100 judges going over, well, 100 and some of podcasts, not thousands. That's crazy. So beyond the fame, obviously, what does a winner get, whether gold, silver or bronze? What does it mean to be awarded a British Podcast Award?
The winner gets a big old trophy, for one thing. Which very important, which I have seen last year, and they weigh a surprising amount. Beyond that, each winner gets a write-up on the British Podcast Awards website. We do a lot of promotion of the winners after the show, as well as obviously promoting the shortlist in the run-up to the ceremony itself. As I said, the awards really were conceived by the founders, Matt Hill and Matt Deegan, as a way to celebrate and champion the British podcast industry and the shows that were coming out of it. And that's very much still the goal. So we work with a number of external partners to promote the winners and the work that they're doing. And a number of previous winners have gone on to do really, really well, both with the shows that they won for and with subsequent projects. You know, we've had winners that have moved on to, you know, new commissions for big shows with other kind of media organizations and publishers. We've had shows continue to build on the success that they've had and kind of grow their own shows organically. I mean, as an example, one of our co-chairs of judges for this year's awards are the co-hosts of Red Handed, Hannah Maguire and Surabhi Bala. And they are the three-time winners of our Listener's Choice category for the past 3 years in a row. And yeah, this year we're getting them in to take a role in the judging process itself. But their podcast has gone from strength to strength. They've got a partnership with Wondery now for advertising sales, and they also hosted Global's short-run investigative podcast Filthy Ritual last year, which was very successful.
That's impressive, and it's very, I guess it's very rewarding as a podcaster to see that. Like you said, okay, if you come down to the quality and produce good content in your own category, right? It doesn't have to be like absolutely reaching to the masses or being listened to by millions and millions of people. It's just about producing a qualitative show, eventually original show. And if you get recognition from that, from the audience, you will get it from the judges, and you can start playing a role in the podcast scene. So that's very, very cool.
Absolutely. And the British Podcast Awards is a fantastic resource for advertisers who want to invest in podcasting for kind of client partnerships, you know, especially now that the British Podcast Awards is being run by Campaign. We'll be doing a lot on that front to put the winners of the British Podcast Awards in front of Campaign's audience of advertisers, media agencies, media buyers, media planners, who will be looking to invest in creative talent and creative solutions over the coming years. And hopefully we can start to form some of those relationships that will see, you know, winners of the British Podcast Awards being in the mix for those kinds of campaigns.
That makes lots of sense. Would you mind me asking, Adam, what's the business model of British Podcast Award? Because the way we go down that road, there is judges, there is filter judges, there is people to organize the event. I mean, I can't even begin to fathom the amount of work there is behind it. So how is it just part of Campaign, or how does it all work?
So Haymarket is a mature media organization with a number of different revenue models. We run a number of events and conferences. We also run a number of award schemes and award ceremonies across a number of different industries, including things like media and advertising. Campaign itself has a number of long-running and successful award schemes, and they operate on a number of sort of revenue models. Without giving too much away, the revenue partly comes from the entry fees for submitting an entry to the awards. It partly comes from selling tickets to the ceremony itself, and it partly comes from sponsorship of the awards, of companies that want to associate themselves alongside those kinds of winners and that sort of spirit of innovation, let's say, of the awards themselves.
Very good phrasing. Okay, that makes sense. One thing we left a bit out or put aside for a moment, but I really want to get back to it. What do you love about podcasting, Adam?
What I love about podcasting is, I mean, one of the things you'll hear most is the low barrier to entry, which is definitely true and a fantastic thing about podcasting. It means that anyone can start a podcast. You don't even need a mic these days. You know, you can record a podcast well enough on your phone for anyone to give it a go. And what this has led to is a fantastic diversity of content and a fantastic diversity of content catering to different interests. There is, and I genuinely mean this, a podcast for absolutely everything you could think of. Every interest, every hobby, every subculture, every identity, however you want to engage with media, there is a podcast for that. And it's one of the most varied forms of media I think I've ever come across. I would say YouTube is probably the closest comparison in terms of the breadth of content that's out there. But then at the same time, it's content that I feel like is really reinvigorating the concept of long-form storytelling and long-form narrative. And it gives a space for nuance and for taking your time with content, both when you're producing it and as a consumer of content. More so than maybe any other medium. It's really, really positive, I think, that there is still a space for that kind of content that takes the time to dig in where it's needed, to the details of a story, or to, you know, to be a bit more playful with how it approaches a specific topic. And as I said before, a lot of content feels like it's getting shorter and shorter and, you know, more squeezed. So it's nice to see a format that isn't afraid to take its time.
Could have not said it better. Yesterday I had an interview with a guest who's actually gonna be published after this one. So I'm gonna allow myself a bit of a spoiler. He told me about a whole new category that, I mean, maybe you know that, maybe people know actually, but I was like, how in the whatever. But he's like, he created 53 podcasts, and a large part of them were podcasts that were just discussing with his wife series, literally TV series. And it's like, he went viral on some of the series, not going to spoil too much, but like completely crazy. And like, you have an audience for everything. And he talked about, for instance, Children of the Stone, which is like a very, I didn't know about it, but very, very niche. I was like, yeah, there is an audience there. And you can tap into this audience by creating a podcast around it, being authentic, just as you say, getting live, getting on air with the mic that can be your phone now. It's very easy to like edit something online and so on and publish it over all the platforms. But the fact that the barrier is so low and you can talk about your passions, you will find eventually an audience. Even if an audience of 10 people, there are people alike out there that you can start connecting with thanks to podcasts and sharing your passion. Could have not said it better.
Here's a fantastic example of that. There's a podcast that I love called The Cinemile that is from a married couple who go to the movies, and then on their walk home from the cinema, they just record their conversation that they have about the movie, sort of what they thought about it, you know, their feelings about it, what they liked, what they didn't like. And I love that because it's a conversation that every single film lover and film buff can immediately relate to. We have all had countless of those conversations. And it's such a perfect encapsulation of how podcasting can be so specific and so relatable and yet reach such a surprisingly wide audience. And that actually was a winner at the very first British Podcast Awards and continues to do fantastically to this day.
Adam, talk to me a bit about advertising in podcasting. I think it's time we like lift this stone. Maybe to begin with, to put a bit of context. So we discussed it a bit earlier, but can you tell me a bit more about brand awareness versus performance marketing, and how does that relate to podcasts?
Absolutely. So advertising, generally speaking, falls into one of two camps. You have what is generally referred to as brand advertising, which is the kind of advertising that is designed to raise awareness of a specific company or brand or product or, you know, something kind of relatively broad and relatively general. And then you have what's known as performance advertising or performance marketing. And that is advertising that is designed to result in a very specific outcome. So that might be driving people towards making a purchase of a particular product. It might be driving people to sign up for a free trial membership or registering for a newsletter or similar. This generally, performance marketing, is where a lot of podcast advertising historically has sat. So most of us will be familiar with the ad campaigns of companies like HelloFresh or BetterHelp or Rocket Money or Dollar Shave Club, so on and so forth. Those kinds of advertising campaigns that rely very heavily on things like discount codes and driving listeners to take a specific action are kind of in the performance marketing camp, the sort of direct response sort of advertising model that has been historically very popular on commercial radio in the US in particular. And that has sort of transferred over to podcasting relatively easily. Now, what you're getting is a lot more brands in the UK particularly, but in other territories as well, really moving from that, from those sort of initial kind of test campaigns that they might have launched sort of in the last couple of years, really looking to podcasting now as more of a creative channel for brand advertising, for really trying to get a sort of a broader message, a more emotive message across to consumers, really forming connections with audiences and trying to improve metrics such as kind of brand sentiment, brand awareness, consideration, all of those sort of nice metrics that marketers and advertisers like to see. Because podcasting is a very intimate medium and a very emotive medium, and it actually does a really good job at influencing those kinds of metrics, where historically TV in particular has been a huge, huge backbone of those kinds of campaigns, and still is. But an increasing number of brands are starting to work podcasting into their media mix to similar ends.
When I think about myself listening to a podcast, right, I will likely be in my car commuting, folding laundry, doing a little gym sesh, whatever, right? The medium, podcast as a medium is also something as a listener you consume whilst you do something else. Back to the very emotive, very intimate format. But so when I'm doing so, probably the last thing I would think of doing is like, oh, wait, I'm hearing a discount code for HelloFresh. Let me pick up my phone whilst I'm doing something else, typically driving. Don't do that. And like, go on HelloFresh and benefit from the discount code. How do you measure outcome of such campaigns? And do you see it performing as well or even better than, I don't know, a Google ad or a TV ad or whatever other ad?
Well, there you've hit a really interesting dilemma for a lot of podcasters and a lot of podcast advertisers particularly, which is that podcasting as a medium was never designed to be great at measuring those kinds of outcomes and those kinds of user journeys. I mean, RSS wasn't even designed as a podcast medium to begin with. It's been sort of retrofitted for audio delivery and, you know, has worked very well for, you know, many years. But the measurability is something that a lot of companies are having a problem with. The reason discount codes continue to be one of the most common sort of tactics for that is because it is one of the most kind of consistent ways that we have, or has been historically, to measure whether or not someone has heard an ad and taken an action. Now, there are a number of companies, a huge number of companies, I should say, who are working to change that and working to improve the podcast ad tech ecosystem. And here I have to give a shout out to our friends over at Sounds Profitable, who have been doing a fantastic job for a number of years on digging into these developments and really helping to push these efforts forward. But there are a number of technologies that are being rolled out and developed and worked on to help make it easier in a sort of privacy compliant way to track whether or not a user heard an ad and then went on to click through to an advertiser's page, or, you know, take whatever action it is that the advertiser is looking for them to do. You know, pixel-based attribution, all of those kinds of things are being actively developed. Spotify, of course, as you might expect, is sort of right in the heart of that, as are a number of other companies. But the simple fact is that it still remains relatively difficult to do attribution for those kinds of ads compared to other formats, particularly search and social. It really just is not designed to provide the same level of trackability and viewability measurement as platforms like YouTube.
Do you have some stats around this, Adam, that you could share with us? Like, what's the typical, I don't know, user engagement? What's the typical feedback of a podcast listener hearing about a brand, like in terms of how positively that person sees that brand? How effective is podcasting beyond the, okay, well, the click-through rate and maybe the return on investment direct from a specific ad? What are the overall metrics of podcasts and how does it compare to other medium?
So this is why so many brands are now starting to come to podcasting for brand campaigns rather than performance marketing campaigns, is that podcasting has fantastic engagement and fantastic buy-in from users, including for ads and commercial messaging. So according to Ofcom's latest figures, 38% of UK respondents say they listen to podcasts at least once a month or more, which is a huge, huge chunk. And as I mentioned, UK podcast spending grew by 23% last year as a result, which really shows the kind of level of investment that's going into the sector. Podcast advertising is judged to be 30% more trustworthy to consumers compared to advertising across social media. And that's according to research from Australia's ARN Neurolab. On top of that, 48% of UK listeners say they trust podcast hosts more than hosts of traditional media like TV or radio shows. And that's from a Magna Global study.
Podcast is all the hype and it's here to stay. I love that. But that also, so beyond the ad and the monetization, I think that shows how deep the connection can become between a listener and its host and its guests. Because you're basically in the ears of somebody for 45 to 60 minutes, right? And like the connection the bond you create based on that is incomparable, I'd say, especially with your very accurate nuance, which is it's not short form content, meaning even if you see a short on an ad on Instagram, TikTok, whatever, don't want to name only one platform here, but you maybe make a connection for 30 seconds and then you just forget about it. Like, look at it. When you scroll on your phone, do you remember the shot you saw like three shots ago? Probably not. That's how efficient podcasts can be. Absolutely love it.
And one of the things I love, and this is probably one of my most common catchphrases when it comes to this topic, but nobody listens to a podcast by accident. You know, TV, radio, you might have it playing in the background. You might have been watching something else and it just, you know, continues to run. You don't get that with podcasting. You're not accidentally spending that 30, 40, 50 minutes with a podcast or a podcast host. It's a very deliberate, very lean-in medium, and that is so rare in sort of modern media.
So, pardon me, but I might steal that catchphrase. Nobody listens to a podcast by accident.
It's certainly not mine originally, so.
Oh, but it's so true. It's so true. I love this. Can you tell me a bit about the apparition of cookies in podcasting and contextual tools? Like, it also shows that we are going much deeper, but like, can you break that down for us?
Absolutely. So we're getting a little bit into the weeds of advertising and sort of MarTech now, but I promise it's worth it. Cookies, as I'm sure most, if not all, of your listeners will be aware, are an increasing topic of focus for privacy legislators, particularly in the EU, but also in various places in the US. And essentially, what they are is they are a little packet of data that is dropped onto your sort of browser by a website in order to track your kind of your movements across the web, you know, where you go from their page and, you know, where you came from to get there for the purposes of things like, you know, content strategy optimization and for, you know, advertising trackability and various other, you know, complicated marketing technology things. The important thing is that those are going away. Google in particular is phasing cookies out this year, third-party cookies particularly, from advertising technology companies who provide the sort of back-end infrastructure for targeting ads to users based on what they have done online. It's a very hot topic for the past couple of years. Privacy regulators and privacy campaigners are understandably upset about this capability, you know, being a thing in the first place. You know, I can see why. But that technology is being phased out. And there are a lot of advertisers, particularly the ones that are putting a lot of money into paid search and social media advertising, which rely a lot on those kinds of cookies to target their ads very, very accurately at, let's say, you know, 45-year-old mothers in, you know, Greater Manchester who listen to classical music and like beef. And, you know, that level of granular trackability has gone into a lot of performance marketing campaigns and a lot of that kind of very targeted spending. With those kind of cookies going away, advertisers are working out how they can replace that capability in their marketing budgets. And podcasting is making a very concerted play to be one of the things that helps to fill that hole. Because podcasting, while it's not targeted in the same way as those kinds of campaigns, which were based on sort of tracking behavior and tracking your interests as a user, they essentially come at the problem from the other angle to get to the same result. So they use a lot of what's called contextual targeting. So, for example, an advertiser might say, okay, I want to reach podcasters and podcast enthusiasts who are interested in media, in advertising, and in podcast growth strategies. And based on that, an advertising provider will be able to look at podcast gurus automatically, will be able to transcribe the audio using AI, and then identify keywords in the audio as well as the context around those keywords, such as, you know, the tone, the sentiment, whether or not those topics are being talked about positively, negatively, skeptically, so on and so forth, and then be able, with a fairly high degree of confidence, to say, okay, your ad for a podcast growth marketing service, let's say, would be a very good fit against this content from a contextual basis, because we can infer from what's being talked about and the way it's being talked about what the listeners are likely to be interested in. We can determine that it is likely to be relevant based on these factors without having to know, you know, for certain that the listeners visited a bunch of podcast marketing websites.
I'm a bit mixed on the topic. On one hand, as a marketer myself, I love cookies. They're just amazing. They're fantastic. As an end consumer, I'm like, yeah, hell no. I don't want that. I don't want that to be tracking everything I'm doing. So it's a very thin line, but I understand that indeed the regulations are like a bit not happy about it. I love to see that podcasting is the answer to this, but then I'm asking myself, as a listener, do I want to be like the perfect target of those advertisers who want to sell their products? I guess that will be a bit the controversy that we need to find kind of fun.
Well, I mean, I'd say yes, because the problem with cookie-based advertising is it is what a machine would think of as effective targeting. And a really good example of this is the very common trope where, you know, you look for a new lawnmower, you know. You do a bit of Googling, what's the best new lawnmower, where can I get one, buy the lawnmower, and then for the next 6 months, all you get is lawnmower ads. And it's like, I've already got a lawnmower, I don't need one anymore. You know, whereas contextual targeting through podcasting is, because it isn't based on data as sort of rigid as that, is able much more to determine kind of the suitability of those kinds of campaigns. And also, I mean, when I'm listening to that ad, if it's contextually matched to that content, it means I'm in the right frame of mind. You know, I might be a senior data analyst at, you know, a tech consultancy, but if I'm listening to a comedy podcast, I probably don't want an advert for, you know, an SAP cloud data warehousing product slapped into the middle of that just because it fits with stuff I'm looking at, you know, in my work hours.
That makes a lot of sense. Adam, I think that was an absolute masterpiece on podcast advertising, but also the overall context of where we are as an industry and why it's becoming such a thing, advertising and podcasting. So if people want to know more about the British Podcast Awards, if they want to apply, if they want to try some stuff, where should they go and what is happening?
So you can find out all of the details about how to enter the British Podcast Awards and why you should at britishpodcastawards.com. You can find out all of the details on the movement and trends and what to expect from the UK advertising and marketing sector at campaignlive.co.uk. And you can also subscribe to the Campaign Podcast wherever you get your podcasts for lots more audio goodness.
Amazing. And the last question we ask all our guests, it's tradition. What are three podcasts that you listen to that you would recommend our audience? And of course, you cannot say the Campaign Podcast, not the Pod one. It has to be something you listen to on your free time.
Absolutely. So there are a couple of podcasts that I have fallen back into recently. One of them is a podcast that I have loved for a number of years. It is a podcast called Quick Question with Soren and Daniel. It is a couple of comedy writers who I have followed for an embarrassing length of time. And it's the classic sort of, you know, two white guys who are in comedy sit and just bounce off each other, which I know there is an unending supply of, but I do quite enjoy it. And I've fallen back into that recently because one of them has recently gotten engaged. And because of the way that parasocial relationships work, I am very happy for him, despite the fact that I have never and probably will never meet him. So that's definitely up there as one of them. A couple of other ones that I have to give honourable mentions to. JB Bartlett's Believe in Magic is a phenomenal investigative series that I really, really love. It's a BBC Sounds podcast, and I found it a really gripping listen. It's only a short-run kind of narrative documentary series, but that's very, very good. And in a similar sort of vein, and I have to give an honourable mention to the podcast that really kind of instilled my early love of podcasting, or one of the early ones, which is The Bugle by Andy Zaltzman, which is a fabulous topical comedy satire show.
Amazing. Three shows I didn't know about, so I will have to give them a go. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.